Blog Talk Radio.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am Lydia Aswolf, and I have fantastic freelance editor Monique Happy with me today. Monique, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Lydia. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is a joy. You know, I was telling you before we came on the air just how much. I don't know that you realize there's a glowing little aura around you because you're an editor. You know, I don't know. I know a lot of authors, aspiring authors, that look at editors like with a little bit of awe because, I mean, the perception is you know things that we don't. How did you – you have a fascinating history, right? Because you were a legal secretary for over 25 years, and then something happened that pushed you down the path of being an editor. Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. As you said, I was a legal secretary for many years, and I was laid off in 2008, and I went back to school to get a paralegal degree, and I took a creative writing class, started doing some of my own writing, and I also got a Kindle around that time, and I started reading a lot of the great independent authors that are available on Amazon. One of them was Mark Tufo, and I'm a big fan of zombies. I've always been a huge fan of anything horror, science fiction, zombies, fantasy. So I read Mark Tufo's, I think his first two books, and I went on his blog and introduced myself and said how much I enjoyed his work, and we began corresponding. And later on Facebook, I added him as a friend, and one day he put a call out asking for someone to edit his next book. And he couldn't pay anything, but he was just looking for somebody that would be interested in doing that. I put my hand forward, as I had a background in editing for attorneys for all those years, and I was able to do that. He liked what I had done so much that he had me do his next few books, and that began the start of my business. And I've enjoyed every minute of it ever since. And I just wanted to give a shout-out to Mark Tufo for giving me that opportunity and really starting me on this path because I love what I do. And again, if not for him taking a chance on me, I wouldn't have been able to break into this.
It's amazing. I mean, that's kind of one of those stories that it's just absolutely amazing how your background kind of converged to let you do this, and in the genre that you love. Now, I told you when we were kind of in the green room before the show that I heard recently that, and I didn't say anything. I tried to be politically correct when and where I can, but I wanted to say something because I heard a couple people on Twitter say, oh, zombies have been dead. Zombies as a genre in literature have been dead the last couple years, and I wanted to say, you know, there's The Walking Dead, the graphic novel. There's World War Z. There's tons and tons, as well as the authors you're speaking about, right? You know, there's tons of zombie literature out there, and I don't think it's an underground, do you?
No. I believe that all of the big publishers and the movie makers are jumping on the bandwagon at this point. The craze for zombies has been around for many years. I know a lot of my friends and a lot of my fellows in the zombie literature world, we've been watching zombie movies and reading zombie books since we were kids. And it's just a lifelong fascination with it. And so I think it's funny that all of a sudden zombies are popular. They're like the next vampires, right? The next big money makers. And that's okay. It's good for the independent authors that write about this genre. But we're here to stay. We've been here a long time. And I'm just thrilled to be in on it as an editor. I edit other genres, but this has to be my favorite, definitely.
Right, and I mean, you've done G.R. Mountjoy, you've done Sean Chesser. I may butcher this name. I just want you to know that Robert. Okay, say it for me, Robert De.
I believe
Coteau?
It's De Coteau.
Okay, thank you. See, okay, but that's one of the things. Did
too.
You start reading when you were really young?
Yes, I did. My dad weaned me on J.R.R. Tolkien, The Hobbit, when I was five, and I read the rest of the series at that point, and it just, I took off from there. I barely read children's books. I just wanted to read everything my mom and dad were reading, John D. MacDonald, anything I can get my hands on, basically.
Right, and I did the same thing, but have you ever found, I have a unique handicap because of it. There are some things I can't pronounce, okay? Like, I know exactly what the word means. If you ask me what the definition of chutzpah is, for instance, right? I would be able to tell you what that means, but the first time I told my husband what it was, I said chutzpah, because I started reading so early that I didn't know how to pronounce things. My favorite mistake in that realm was whores devours, which are actually hors d'oeuvres.
Right.
Have you ever done that? Please make me feel better. Lie. Say you have.
Oh, no, all the time. As a kid, because, again, I started reading so early, everybody would make fun of me because I truly thought that there was two words, fanatic and fanatic, and that they had the same meaning.
Oh, you made me feel so much better.
Economics instead of economics. I'm very phonetic when it comes to that. And what is the other one? Joaquin? It looks like Joaquin to me.
Yeah. I've just met a kindred spirit because I really have thought I was the only one, and every time I start speaking, you just don't know what I'm going to come up with because it's not going to make any relevant sense anywhere. You know what really I loved? Okay, you have a blog on WordPress, right, that everyone can check out, right?
Yes.
Now, is that mohappy.wordpress.com, or don't you have a new blog?
I have a new blog, and I believe it's Monique Happy Editor is my name on there.
Right. Well, you know what I do? I just Google. Google Monique Happy, people. Check it out. Because there's some great interviews with you. I follow you on Twitter. That's where I met you. And just fabulous. And you even write short stories yourself as well, don't you?
Yes. I had several short stories published on a website, which unfortunately has now been taken down. But I'm starting to put some of my short stories on my blog, and I do have full intentions of writing my own full-length zombie novel someday, but I'm just having too much fun editing my friend's books right now, so my writing has taken a back seat.
And without, I don't even want to talk about anyone you're working with now, no names, nothing like that, what do you think the most common mistakes are that you see? Because I've already told you, I mean, in promoting the show, I told everyone that you were actually staging an intervention on the lowdown today to help me with semicolons. That's not strictly true. I'm cutting down my use, you know, but what are the most common issues that you see?
Well, it's kind of funny. I was on Facebook the other day chatting with some friends, and there was one of a grammar meme that, and I don't know if I'm saying meme right, now that I say that.
Neither do I.
Right? I know how to spell it, know what it means. But there was a meme about punctuation, and it's that not everything that ends with an S needs an apostrophe. And everything that I see, so many people use the apostrophe with the S. It's just second nature to most people. And really, that, basically, you only need an apostrophe if it's a possessive. So
I just think is, are. If it means, if I'm saying you're and it means you are, or it's and it means it is, and I may be saying that wrong because, like I said, I'm not always grammatically correct, but I literally have to stop and think. I'm a 40-year-old woman, okay, and I have to stop and think, are you going to use Y-O-U-R or Y-O-U apostrophe R-E? You know, is it possessive or not? Do you need that apostrophe? And I still screw it up all the time, but semicolons are my weakness. That I don't know why. I love them. I love the look of them. I know what they're supposed to do. And yet when I go back over manuscripts, I see that I have sadly, liberally put them in there. But, you know, the main reason I like to showcase you is you, because with more indie authors coming around and more great literature that they're creating flooding the marketplace, we have to address the fact that the great literature, the great indie authors are using editors like yourself. I've seen a lot of nightmare indie work, and it is just hugely important if you are an indie author to have someone like Monique go over your work. I mean, I know you don't want to toot your own horn. I know you don't, but you should, because it really, it's about first impressions. Once you put that work out there, if you think it's good enough, it's better to have a second pair of eyes look over it. If I didn't have someone do that, then I have semicolons everywhere. I mean, everywhere, every sentence, people, every sentence. I have done that before. If first impressions count. I mean, unless you're going to try and go in a witness protection program or change your name or write under another name, first impressions count, and that's where Monique comes in. I mean, it's hugely important to have someone look over that copy, isn't it?
Yes, and matter of fact, I work with some really great, talented, independent authors, and a handful of them self-published without having an editor first, or perhaps they used someone that wasn't as qualified as myself. And they put their work out there, and they're selling books, and people are reading them, and then get reviews like this. It's a great story. It really flows. I found it fascinating. Great character development. But they really need an editor. There's misspellings everywhere. There's commas where they shouldn't be. It really distracts me from the story. I might not buy the next one because of it. And we see reviews like that, and it's really sad because, again, these are talented people that I'm working with, and a lot of indie authors out there, talented. But once these authors realize, hey, you know what, people are starting to like my work and look at these negative reviews I'm getting, then they'll contact someone like myself, and I will do a re-edit on their book, and then they'll republish it, and then they start getting these really great reviews. Ah, see, you got an editor. Great. Really looking forward to the next one. And then I'll start editing the books before they're released. And again, they get from the get-go, they get good reviews. And it means everything to them because reviews are the lifeblood for these indie authors. That's word of mouth. You've just got to manage that well. And unfortunately, once you get some bad reviews on your books, those stay with you because you can't delete them off your – you can't just delete your bad reviews just because you're not happy with them.
Unfortunately, because, I mean, there are some people, you know, we talked a little bit about Amazon before. I mean, I don't pay attention to reviews there. I don't really pay attention to reviews other than on Goodreads. Then I will actually pay attention to what people have to say because Goodreads is for book lovers. Now, maybe I'm stupid, maybe I'm naive, and I already know I'm a hypocrite, but I think Goodreads is a little more genuine because we've heard so many horror stories about people on Amazon purposely either being paid for good reviews and this is beyond my ability to comprehend, but authors who write in the same genre attacking other authors. So I don't even pay attention to Amazon reviews anymore. And that kind of behavior is just, it's absolutely deplorable. Is there anywhere you rely on for kind of trustworthy reviews, or do you just read it for yourself and see?
Well, I do agree with you that Goodreads seems to be much less biased and that people do seem to give more honest reviews. And unfortunately, there is that cloud now over the Amazon reviews. But I do read them. If I am contacted by an author for my editing services, I will actually go and investigate them. I will stalk them, you might say. And I'll go and I'll read reviews and I'll see what people have to say. So whether it be on Goodreads or Amazon, or I'll Google them and I'll see what people are saying about them out there. Because, frankly, if someone has some reviews and I hate to say this, that they just aren't doing well, they aren't writing well, I already know in advance it might be kind of a handful to edit for them. That will factor in when I talk to them about becoming my client.
I mean, nowadays we just, that's the other thing that indie authors need to be aware of. Anyhow, it's not just it is in approaching a freelance editor. It does apply to a traditional publisher or traditional publishing model with an editor in it. It applies to literary agents. They will Google you. your Facebook, your Twitter, your Pinterest, Google, wherever you're at social media-wise, you're going to be looked at. And there have been authors, so it makes even more sense to me that you would Google people, because there have been authors who have created ginormous amounts. Please don't correct me for saying ginormous. I actually know it's not a word. But they've created, let's say, enormous amounts of ill will, just clouds of dark nastiness, because they haven't agreed with a review. They show themselves to be kind of, I'm not naming names, but we all know about it. I mean, if you pay attention to the publishing world and you Google a given author, there are some authors out there who will give themselves a bad name because maybe they got a bad review. Maybe they didn't. They could look up the person who gave them that review and complain about it. That would obviously factor into your decision whether or not to take a client on.
True. And on the other hand, I am much more likely to take on someone that has had a lot of bad reviews or is struggling, whereas a traditional publisher or an agent might see all the bad reviews or the poor reputation this writer has and walk away. But my job is kind of, I sometimes think, is a rescue person, not to make light of real-life rescue people. But I do, I have gone in and really saved the image of quite a few writers for their books, to polish those up and make them the way they should be, to make the writer's voice shine through so they don't have to worry about all those commas and semicolons and whatnot. But it's very true. Once you have a reputation out there, whether it's on the blogosphere or in the reviews or anywhere found on Google, that's out there permanently, just like in any area of your life. And so you've got to be very careful to manage that. And I must say, I learned very early on to tell my authors, do not argue with the reviewers, because you're just going to look, I don't want to say a bad word, you're not going to look like
crap. Well, it's true. They'll look like crap.
All.
I mean, that's the best way to put it. They'll look like crap. And the thing is that it's like, okay, I'm going to speak, because you're a wonderful freelance editor and you're a very nice person. I have never claimed to have either of those traits, okay? So whenever I look, I'm like, and this is awful. This is really awful. Again, remember, I never said I was wonderful, because I am not. I look at things like that, and I think, I know as a fact, because when I've seen where authors, for whatever reason, are so incensed, they immediately start griping at the person who gave them the bad review. People flock to that like flies on poo. I flock to it because what you're watching is a train wreck, okay?
Yeah.
And the sad fact about human beings is we are curious little creatures, and we pay more attention to something like that happening to maybe a well-known author who's suddenly losing it in a public forum. I've even seen occasions where agented authors have kind of disentangled themselves from their agents and then turned around and kind of bit the hand that feed them. The more you do that, the more you're gonna get more page views if you have a blog, but they're not gonna be positive page views, and you're not gonna make any sales. Which brings me to a topic I've said time and time again here on the Lowdown. Irritates me. I don't like when people give away their work for free. What's your take on that, Monique?
Well, I do think there's a good reason for that. When you have your next book in your series coming out, I do think it's good to either reduce the amount, the price on your first book, or give it away for free, because there are a lot of us out there who don't have a lot of money and love to read. So I've got to tell you, if I see something that looks halfway decent and it's free or it's 99 cents on Amazon, I'm going to grab it. I'm more likely to grab something if it's free. I've read some really great books that were free and then I've gone back and purchased the next several in the series. So I do think it's a good marketing tool. I really do.
Even if they're starting out, because the thing is, I worry about it setting expectations. I want every author in the traditionally published, I want them to be able to make money. I mean, well, it's a marketing tool. If they want to do that after they have a book or two out, and I'd rather pay 99 cents, and I'll go right up through there, but I feel bad if I'm not purchasing that book. because they've worked really hard on it. Maybe you've assisted them with it. And there is amazing stuff to be found, no doubt about that. I just really want authors to be paid for what they're doing, because I'm worried that this free book, it happens all the time. I'm worried about readers' expectations forming in which they get a book for next to nothing. And it's worth something to that author. It may not be their livelihood, because we all know one of the first things anyone should know is don't get into writing and quit your day job, because you're just not going to make loads and loads of money. You're not. But I'd like to see those authors making something, because quite frankly, you know, we're getting to a point where so much quality content is offered for free, it makes me wonder what the publishing model is going to look out later, because now even the large publishing companies will sometimes say, okay, well, here's a free book, here's a taste, so you can come back for more, which I kind of understand, but I feel racked with guilt about it. Do you know what I mean? I just I want them to get something, because I don't want the reading audience to balk at having to pay $1.99, $2.99, $3.99, $6.99 for the next book when it comes out. I think with some people, I mean, there are plenty of intelligent readers out there, God knows, billions of them. But there are also millions of people who are, you know, kind of playing the system, if you will.
Maybe, but I still do think that there's the benefit, as I said, and not your first book necessarily, but subsequent books, in getting your name back out there and creating some stir and getting people interested in who you are and what you're writing about. I definitely don't think people should put their first books out there for next to nothing or for free.
It's a great perk, though. After that, because I totally agree with you. After that, it's a great perk. Or do like they have Kindle singles. Do something like that. If you want to give that away for free, I will snap it up. I just want them to get what's coming to them in a good way. Do you know what I mean? And I think the indie author scene is just rich and thriving to a degree. I'm not sure at times if traditional publishing is aware of. Now, I'm not speaking against traditional publishing, but I am saying a lot of the things I'm seeing coming out of the indie world is so much more original than some of the, at times, carbon copy-ish things that come out of traditional publishing. It's like the movie industry. There's a formula for certain things, and when they go on to make so much money, the same thing sometimes happens in the traditional publishing world. I think the indie author world is coming out with some of the most revolutionary new ideas, and I have a feeling you're going to agree with me on that.
Definitely, definitely.
The indie world.
I don't remember the last time I bought a traditionally published book that was published by one of the big names. I'm supporting the indie author market, and that's the only way I know how, really, is to buy their books. And like I said, I will go for the freebies, but I will then go on and buy their other books. I'm a big believer in this form.
I am too, because I'm finding so much good stuff in it. Now, zombies are obviously your favorite genre, and you have no idea. There's an interview with Joe McKinney on your blog, and I enjoyed that interview so much as soon as you mentioned Shaun of the Dead, because that's my favorite. You love anything George Romero has had a hand in. I love Shaun of the Dead. Just love it. I thought it was one of the funniest movies ever.
Yes, I can't wait to see this next one that's out. World's End, I think.
Oh, I want to see that. Yeah, I'm already looking at it and just cracking up. Simon Pegg, I think he's hilarious. I should remember his partner in crime's name. But Hot Fuzz, all of that, they just crack me up. And, you know, it's not like, especially with Shaun of the Dead, you know, that was, I didn't think that was expected to make the money that it did.
I don't know. I think it was hilarious. And I also like Bruce Campbell's the Evil Dead series. Any campy
awesome
humor? Right. Campy humor and zombies. You got me right there.
Right. And Evil Dead. I'll watch that. That's one of those things. If it's Shaun of the Dead, if it's Evil Dead, I'm not as much of a Romero fan. Go ahead, gasp. gasp. I know, it's awful. But I like the Bruce Campbell. I love the Evil Dead, and I love Shaun of the Dead. If they are playing in my television, on my television, when I walk past, I'm going to sit down and watch it. I cannot. And the beautiful thing is, it's not just books. You like movies. Are you a fan of the Walking Dead series?
Oh, sure. Of course. It's awesome. Team Daryl all the way.
Amen. I'm with you there. How do you find the time? Because just editing in and of itself is fascinating to me. Okay, a client gets a hold of you, and then how does that work? I mean, if we have listeners out there who are wondering, okay, hey, I like the sound of this Monique Happy, and you should. Thank you very much. I'll just back that up. How do you, first of all, we have to email you. How does that whole process work? Because I'm absolutely fascinated.
Well, let's see. In a nutshell, someone will contact me, and let's say maybe it's their third book, and all of a sudden they're thinking, wow, I really need to get this edited before I publish it. They'll contact me and ask me my rates and see if I will be interested in editing for them. And I always say yes. But what I do ask when it's not their first book, I will ask them for copies of their previous books so I can read them and get a feel for their writer's voice and a feel for the main characters and where the story's going. And then I just begin. I begin editing that book, and I have been using track changes in the Word program so the authors can see exactly what I'm suggesting, what I'm adding, what I'm deleting, and I'll send them a sample, a couple of pages, so they can see and make sure that they are happy with what I'm doing. And we just go
from
there.
But there's a couple different things you can do. There's plain old proofreading where you're looking for spelling errors and all of that. And then there's also copy editing, which is much more involved, right?
Right, exactly. I'm looking for, there's a lot of different things. Consistency, make sure the person's name is spelled the same at the beginning of the book as it is at the end of the book. If they have blue eyes in the beginning, make sure they're blue eyes at the end. Sentence structure, word flow, to make sure, even like I said, if it's something happens in book one and all of a sudden in book three, the person is completely different, acting completely differently, I'll bring that to the author's attention. You know,
oh, God,
really,
Monique, we could have used you. We could have used you so hard on Breaking Dawn, the final book in the Twilight Saga. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't care that I'm saying this live on air. We could have used you in that last book because continuity went, I don't know where it went, to another universe. But the other thing you'll do is you'll even, like, rework or rewrite a sentence or even a whole paragraph and then leave it up to the author.
Right.
If they like your
right.
version or if they like their version better.
Right. And it's really, sometimes it's just a matter of tweaking a couple of words or phrases. Or even changing the order of the paragraphs in that one chapter. And it'll just, I don't know how to explain it. It just zings.
It makes
and
a huge difference because I've had to do it. It makes a huge difference.
Right. And fresh pair of eyes is always good because I know as someone that writes as well that you just get blinded. It's your story. It grew out of your imagination. You put it down on paper. You can't be objective. And if you have a fresh set of eyes come in, they're going to see exactly what little shifts it might need to just make it just right. And I just finished up a short story for Bruce Blanchard. I hope I'm not butchering his name. And it was a fascinating short story. And I didn't do a whole lot to it, but it tweaked it just enough, and he was very happy with it. And that's what I like doing. I'm not the artist. They are, but I do come along and just fine-tune and polish and shift things around a bit, and always keeping in mind it's their work, it's their voice. I'm just enhancing what they've already written.
Yeah, but I find that to be artistic. I think you are an artist. I think you have to be an artist to be able to look at a paragraph, to look at a sentence, and say, you know what, if we just reverse the order of the words, look at how this works now. I mean, you're like a mechanic of words. And I think there, there's artistry and mechanics, and I think there's a, very much an artistry in what you do. Speaking of artistry, we will be talking with Monique Happy a little bit more about her artistry after our really quick break here. We will be right back here on Lydia's Literary Lowdown. You're listening to WGGM.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always, in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am here with fantastic freelance editor Monique Happy. I want to talk a little bit about the people that you actually work with. We'll get back to your artistry, but you have so many people that you work with, and I think they deserve a mention. So what kind of work are you, what kind of authors' work have you done or are working on now?
Well, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to Sean Chesser. Sean Chesser is listening right now, and he's just one of my favorite clients. He's a great guy, fun to work with, and he just gave me the thumbs up, sent me a thumbs up in a private message on Facebook. So he's listening in from Jackson Hole, where he's traveling with his family, and I'm just so thrilled that he took the time to listen in. We have a great relationship. We've been working together for probably, gosh, a year and a half, 2 years now, and Sean just released his fifth book in his Surviving the Zombie Apocalypse series. It's called Allegiance, and it was a lot of fun to work on, and he's now busy writing book six. So I can't say enough. Sean Chesser, book five, which is Allegiance, and it continues the adventures of Cade Grayson, who's a special operative who goes on missions to eradicate the zombies and the opposing military forces, and yet always makes sure to come back home to the military base and check in on his family. And Sean is one of the people that has developed a very strong female lead. It's Brooke Grayson, Cade's wife. She's learned to, she's had to protect her family, really learn how to deal with day-to-day dangerous situations, how to handle weapons to go out on missions with the other soldiers, and they are now teaching their young daughter, Raven, how to defend herself in this apocalyptic world. So
it sounds fascinating, and I am a sucker for series. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't like books to end and that be it. I'm a sucker for series. If I can keep on exploring that world, I want to keep on exploring that world.
Yes, I definitely. If I see where someone has written a handful of books, I'm much more likely to buy those because I want to be able to read in that. I want to immerse myself in that world for a couple of weeks. I don't want to just read it and have it be done. So, but yeah, look for Sean Chesser. His books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And his next one, we hope to have it out in December. I'll be working on that in November. So I'm really excited to learn what's happening because as an editor, I get to find out what happens first. So I know that everybody's
jealous
about
that. I envy
you
mightily. I mean, I'm seething with bitterness right now. I really am because that's my favorite part. That's my favorite part of hosting this show is that I get a look at some things that aren't out there at all. And so I can legitimately come on here and say this is absolutely amazing. But there's also discovering people like Sean Chesser, discovering
right.
their books and being able to help promote them. I mean, it's absolutely fabulous. And this series, any kind of a zombie book that has a strong female component to me, I think is much needed. I mean, we've seen it in the graphic novel, I don't know if novel is the right word, but we've seen it in The Walking Dead, the
right.
movie version, the literature. It isn't done often enough. I mean, I don't think it's done often enough. I'll tell you what intrigues me about Sean Chesser's series is just the fact that you've got a woman who has to learn how to do this and a child who happens to be a female who has to do this. So there's
right.
not this, I've got to run in front of the little woman and protect her now. No, she can protect
right.
herself, thank you very much. And I think that's something that's been sorely lacking. That's part of a great new trend that I'm seeing in zombie literature, which is that the women are well able to take care of themselves. Though, this brings us, you did a great interview with Joe McKinney. Now, he's another author you've worked with, right?
No, actually, I haven't had the pleasure of working with Joe McKinney. But he's going to be releasing, I'm trying to think the name of his series. I'm sorry, I'm going blank. But
I blank all the time. The funny part was that he asked you in an interview you did, the zombie apocalypse is happening right now. Are you prepared, Monique Happy, sorry about that. Would humanity win? And I love how you answer because you're like, okay, I've worked with these authors, but I'm not really prepared. And, quote, you say, physically, I probably could not outrun a zombie unless they are of the shuffling variety. I just
That's
love
right.
that. I thought that was freaking awesome. Except you go on to say, not sure who would win if it came down to Mama Bear versus a zombie. I'm just going to throw my little vote in here. I think it's going to be you.
Thank you. I think it would be too.
I have faith that you could use a pen, a pen knife, a gallon of milk, anything that was around you, I'm pretty sure you could use, because I'm sure you want to keep your manicure intact and look really cool afterwards.
That's right, a little wipe of blood off myself. But, yes, I think if the zombies were slow enough, I could survive for a while. But I would definitely want to hook up with one of these prepper groups, the ones that have all of the weapons and the food and the ammo, the vehicles. I think that's always a good idea to hook up with people that know what they're doing.
They have shows about those everywhere, the Doomsday Preppers.
Right. They're smart.
They are, but
crazy.
You know, you have to get all editorial on their asses, Monique. You have to, because some of them, okay, you have to do a little Google search in your mind, okay, because some of them, I've seen Doomsday Prepper, and there are some people I'm like, you are absolutely amazing. I would love to bunk down with you, but I'm happily married, and you need to respect those boundaries, sir, okay? And then there are the people who make me go, I would rather take my chances with zombies than anywhere near you in your bunker.
Well, this is true.
See, you're just nicer than I am. You're nicer than I am. That's all there is to it. It's like, okay.
I love everybody.
Well, and I think that's awesome, but I also think it's interesting that you're just, you were saying during the break that you really like, you do think about it. I mean, you think about, if something catastrophic were to happen, you can be driving around and think, well, that would be a good place to stay, or that would be a good place to hide. So, I mean, that to me gives you all the preparation needed to strike out on a novel of your own. But how much time do you really have?
Yeah, definitely not enough to be writing. But I'm never going to be one of those where if the zombie apocalypse happens, I'm not going to spend the first 3 hours in disbelief. How can this be happening? What are these strange creatures that are coming at us? Why are they trying to bite me? It'll be like, hell no, it's zombies. Right on, let's go.
See, you're prepared because you've worked with all these fantabulous authors. That's why.
Yes, definitely.
Now, are you willing to concede that gorgeousness could be a word? Or are you going to swap me down on that?
No, and I'm a big believer in letting my authors make up their own words if they so choose. And I've got to go back to Mark Tufo, who did create some new words. I can't recall any at the moment, but that's part of the author's voice. You know, we don't, frankly, even when people are writing dialogue, we do not all speak like this. We speak like this. We contract our words and speak in short, choppy sentences. It's got to be real life. You can't just edit the heck out of a manuscript and have it have any life to it. So,
well,
can
go on. Sorry.
Oh no, I just really wanted to jump back and talk about some of the other people I'm working with, because, you know, I don't just edit their works. I promote, I do that for fun and for free. I do it because I love my authors, and I'm always on Facebook or Twitter or Google+ or reading different blogs and offering to write on different blogs, because, again, these indie authors, the lifeblood for indie authors is promotion and word of mouth and reviews. So I want to get my chance in there to plug some of these great guys that I work with. I'm going to go back to Sean Liebling. Now, he is another one that has some strong female leads in his books. And, you know, he's gotten together. He has some friends, a doctor, psychiatrist, different people. They actually sit around and shoot the breeze and talk about what would happen in the event of an apocalypse. And it's very real life what he's come up with in his books, because you've got to know that at the beginning of an apocalypse, primarily the men are going to be trying to defend the women, right? The women and the children. So after the initial wave of death, you're going to be left with a great number of women and children and not as many men. So obviously these women are going to have to learn how to defend themselves. They're going to have to shoot, learn weaponry. The kids are going to have to be trained on how to survive. So, again, Sean is another one that has some great female leads. And it's funny because the main character in his book, Jay, is a womanizer and a flirt, and at the beginning of the book just can barely keep it in his pants, if that's not too graphic. But he learns through the happenings of the apocalypse. He grows up. I mean, he never stops loving the women, but he also knows the value of having a partner who can have his back and who can shoot as well as he can. So,
I'm liking the whole premise. But that's because I can, you know, you hear about chauvinist pigs, and I could be a feminist pig. So I think women take over the earth. Woo! Right?
Right.
That's probably not what actually happens. I'm just saying that would be a fun, that's a fun premise to play around with. I mean, anything, and I'm a really big fan of anyone who can do, because I love urban fantasy, I love horror, I love, I've read The Hobbit, I've read all of the Lord of the Rings books, I've read Weiss-Hickman books, so I'm all across the fantasy spectrum there and sci-fi and all of that. But I have to tell you, the more realistic it is, the more you couch it in terms of the real world, particularly where urban fantasy, magical realism, alternate history, whenever you do that, the more real that you can get, the more I buy into that book and the more I love it and I have to have more. So he has a series then.
Right. It's called Blood, Brains, and Bullets. And the second book is entitled Legacy of the Living. And that's just been released in the past month. And he's also busy working on book 3 in his series. So those are some really good books to read. Sean Liebling. He has a website, and it's also available on Amazon. And I've got a couple other guys that are having, let's see, Joseph Coley, I'm working on his book. That'll be released soon. Tony Baker, I'm working with him, and his book will be released in December or January. And R.R. Haywood, or Rich Haywood, he's an English author who's finishing up his 13th book. I get to start with that. And if he likes what I do, then I get to go back and edit his first 12. So that good news came in this week on top of the interview with Joe McKinney and then the interview with you. So it's been an awesome week. And last but not least, I do edit, other than the zombie genre, I get to work with Josh Dalzell on a science fiction thriller series, Omega Force. And the latest, which is Omega Force Savage Homecoming, we'll be working on very soon, and it will hopefully be released in September or October. I got to read the first two books, fell in love with it. I love sci-fi. I don't know if you remember that old TV show, from a couple of years ago, Farscape.
Oh, loved it.
Loved it. Okay.
I was devastated when it went off the air. I was devastated that they didn't resolve it. And then I was devastated with how they did supposedly kind of resolve it, but they never really did, if you know what I'm saying.
Exactly. Well, that's what Josh Dalzell's thriller sci-fi series reminds me of. So lots of space travel, world-crushing battles, action, aliens, beautiful far-off worlds. So I'm very excited. As I said, I've read the first two books, and I can't wait to get the third book in my hand so I can find out what happens next.
Which is awesome. I mean, that's just one of the best parts of the job, to be able to see. I mean, what is the feeling like when these books come out and you know you've had a hand in just helping them shine? What is that feeling like for you?
I really do feel like a proud stepmama, and it's so neat because my authors, after the book has, I'll then format it for CreateSpace so they can get it printed in hardcover, and they'll sign the front cover and say something really nice, and they'll send it to me, and I've got them in a special place on my shelf, and I get to show that to my family. See, this is what I do for a living, and, you know, my whole family isn't that insane about zombies and horror as I am, but they still think that's pretty cool to see, you know, my name printed in the book above my website, and to see that handwritten acknowledgement of how much these authors appreciate what I do. And I just love all my guys. It's the best job in the whole world. If you had asked me,
I think I'd be wandering over to where you keep all those. I just wander over them and like look over and over again. Shine with absolute joy. And they're all so interesting. I mean, the other thing is, do you have any parts? I mean, you say you help publicize, and you've done an amazing job, because all of the premises that you've kind of outlined are absolutely amazing. The reason I bring it up is because do you help them craft any sort of a pitch or anything like that? Because you sound like a natural with pitches to me.
Well, actually, I did write some pitches and blurbs and book covers for Sean Liebling, and I think I helped Sean Chesser with his, and that's one of the services I'm going to be expanding what I will be offering my authors in addition to the promotion services. I'm going to be offering to write those blurbs for them, the elevator pitch, the, what is it, like 30 words or less? If you're trapped in an elevator with an agent or the president of the big publishing house, you've got 30 words or less to hook his attention. That's the elevator pitch. And then on to the blurbs for your Amazon page or your website, because if you don't hook people in that first little paragraph where you're telling them what the book's about, they're just going to move on. And I was looking for something to read yesterday, and I was looking on the websites on Amazon and whatnot, and I would read these really boring descriptions, and I thought, why? Why would they do that? That's the first. That's one of the first things people see, the cover and that blurb. You've got to make it pop. I'm also working.
Yeah, and that's a determining factor in your query. I mean, I can say with my kind of, it's not about the zombies, it's about the hybrids is how I put it. But with my own, you know, I'm still on the querying agent stage, and quite a few agents already have the manuscript, but that hook cannot be underestimated, because it's 35 words or less, and if you nail it, you nail it. I mean, you've got to think of it almost like a trailer or things like that, and I have to tell you, you've nailed it, because the premises that you've thrown out there, not once did my eyes glaze over. The way that you put it, you absolutely have a talent for that. And, you know, do you ever think it's almost like some of their talent leaches into you, some of your talent leaches into them? Does it actually work that way? Because, I mean, if some of the authors you work with, say they have a slight, just a very slight, tiny little semicolon addiction, okay, do you see an improvement in that over time?
I do. When I edit a book, I like to, as I said, use track changes, and there's a feature where you can put comments in. So when I do something and I'm changing things, I'll put a comment in, and I'll even put a link as to the website where they can read more about that topic, the Chicago-style manual. So they are learning as they go along. It's collaboration. So I don't think that I'm responsible for how well these guys write or how well they write after the third or fourth book, but I do think it's helpful. And I've got to tell you, for example, Sean Chesser, I just did his fifth book, and I came and described to you how much better it is than his first few books, and those were good. This one, I was getting chills. I just couldn't believe the quality of his writing and the character development.
Right, but you did help with that. I mean, you did help with that, and I think that they've helped you as well with their unique ability, because they have to be able to inspire you through their voice in that book to get those pitches and blurbs out there.
Yeah. It's a treat. I don't know what to say. I don't want to take credit because, again, it's their
I think it works both ways.
But,
I think it is collaboration in the absolute highest form that can be. You give some and you get some on both sides because you've had the privilege of reading their book. Obviously, it also sounds like very much to me that you don't take on what you don't love.
True. I mean, fortunately, everybody that's approached me has written in a genre that I love. I don't necessarily think that if an attorney approached me right now and asked me to work on a legal document, I'd probably tell him no. I've had enough of that for a lifetime. But I don't know. I just love everything I work on. And again, it's primarily horror and zombies and sci-fi. So
We'll put this another way. What genres would you not, if we have any authors out there listening, what genres would you not be open to editing? I mean, obviously you do short story work, but like historical romance, things like that. What genres are you not as keen on?
Well, that's kind of like asking me what my favorite books are. There's just so many.
Oh, you can't do it, can you?
I can't.
Same here, because I have such a wide spectrum of books that I love to read. It really comes down to the story. And that's why I don't ask you how to describe voice, because the best way to describe voice is think of a book that you picked up. Think of your favorite book, audience. Think of your favorite book. Think about that moment you read that page and you had to turn the next page and the next page and the next page. That's a voice. And every voice is unique as a fingerprint. So I would imagine every genre, depending on the story, is as unique as a fingerprint and should be judged separately on their own merits rather than kind of blindly spitting out a genre you wouldn't accept.
Exactly. It's like asking me to pick out who's my least favorite child. I love them all. I'll read anything. I'll read romance. I'll read erotica. I'll work on anything. And speaking of erotica, there's some great erotic scenes in Shawn Liebling's books. So, ladies, it's the 50 Shades of Grey for the zombie world. It's quite, quite
the
fun to work on.
For the thinking person zombie world, okay?
There you go.
Yeah, the thing is, because I'm always impressed when, one of my pals, Patrick Burdine, he did a novella, and I'm always fascinated whenever a man is doing a scene that involves erotica, because I think there are cases in which, believe it or not, I've seen men do it better than women.
Yes, definitely. He has a very good hand with it.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to go with the obvious now that we brought hands up. I'm going to try and avoid that.
Let's do it.
It's really hard, Monique. Wait, I probably shouldn't have used it. I'm a
naughty,
filthy little sailor. That's all
you
I
are.
Am, people. I'm absolutely filthy. I did not aim to say that. It was perhaps a Freudian slip. Sorry about that.
Or a slip of the tongue.
Oh, see? You're compounding. You're making it worse.
Yes,
so
I am.
We can find you, Monique, as Monique Happy on Twitter, right?
Yes.
You also have a Facebook page. And my recommendation is, especially for the blog, is Google Monique Happy. Google her.
Yes.
You're going to find results. And they're good results. I really like your short story, Nikki, on your site, by the way.
Thank you. That's a little tidbit about my personal life, that it was very therapeutic to write it.
I really enjoyed it. I really did. And now, did I tell you an hour would fly? Did I?
Yes, and I'm not nervous in the least anymore. Actually, I'm ready for another hour. Let's go. Let's keep talking.
The problem is Blog Talk just isn't going to let me do that. But I know this. I would love to have you and check out some of your author's work as well and hopefully have them at a future date. I cannot thank you enough for coming on.
Let's do it. Sounds great. Thank you again. And hello to everybody that's listening. Love you all. And I'll see you on Facebook. Thank you, Lydia.
Not a problem. You take care. Okay, everybody. Next week is a great episode because I'm going to have author of Library Jumpers, Brenda Drake, on. And now, if you have not heard me blather on about Brenda Drake before, it's because I actually am in awe of the woman. I'm in awe of all she does. Wait until you hear the premise next week, same time, same place, of her book, Library Jumpers. There's another little thing. You know, I'm always mentioning Brenda or other people who have contests going on. Brenda happens to have a contest going on the very day she's going to appear on the show next week. I'm looking around. It's Pitch Madness. It's going to be on August 24th from 12:01 a.m., August 24th till 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What do you need to enter? You need a 35-word maximum pitch and the first 250 words of your finished manuscript. It looks to me as if all genres are being accepted here. And if the 250-word falls in the middle of a sentence, go to the end of the sentence. She's going to post formatting instructions this week before the submission window opens. along with the email address to send your entries to. Check out her blog. It's brynleedrake.blogspot.com, or just Google her. She's absolutely fantastic. Follow her at Brynda Drake so you can keep in touch with her. She's marvelous, very personable. We're going to have her on next week. We will be talking about all she does for other authors, and more importantly, I cannot wait to get my greedy little mitts on her debut novel, Library Jumpers. Everybody, have a great week. We will talk to you next week, and we will be welcoming the lovely Brynda Drake on Lydia's Literary Lowdown. You have been listening to WGGM. Well, that was awesome.